Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Yes, it is. Morena, Lara.
Hi, Lara.
How are you this morning?
Oh, pretty good. I mean, this is the thing I said every time, but it's practically December now, so it's practically Christmas.
Yeah.
I'm rest, but it's not still.
I'm really liking your mindset with that. Like, I think we should all adopt it. We should all just get on the Christmas vibe.
We're just, like, crawling to the finish line, eh?
We are, and, like, I've got a kid, so I've got to do decorations soon.
Oh.
And pull that out quite soon. Yeah. But it's super fun with the kid, but it's just like, oh, no, where are all the decorations?
Yeah, where did I put them last year?
Real. We've got some dense topics to get into today. Top of a lot of people's minds, and a real controversial one has been the ban on puberty blockers, which is quite a heated debate, but I guess there's a lot of criticism of the government making such a big sort of blanket decision, which a lot of healthcare providers don't necessarily agree with.
Yep, that's pretty much it. So we've seen a couple of really great pieces, one by Jamie Vail, who is a transgender research leader and like a bit of a talk-on to me, actually. She's super awesome. But it's a piece on The Conversation, so if people want to catch up with the issues, she's written a great piece on that. And Julia DeBray and John Fenelty, who are a couple of academics in this space as well. And basically the way that these absolute experts summarise the evidence is that, you know, there is really no evidence much to suggest that puberty blockers are causing any harm. But in fact, Julia and John argue that they are absolutely positive and absolutely positive for young people's mental health in this space through their survey data and bits and pieces. Like, there are some absolutely haunting and heartwarming quotes from young transgender people in that piece. And so fundamentally what this comes back to is, yeah, government making decisions about healthcare where, you know, whānau, young people, medical experts, doctors are saying this is a bit ridiculous and interference. So it's again using transgender rights as a political football. And when you're looking at something like populism, which populism, people always kind of, it takes a while to hear around populism because it seems like it might be something that's popular or whatever it is. But it just means like, okay, we've got these, to me, as someone who's written on it, it just means we've got these big issues in society. What are some simple solutions we can say will fix it, when we know there's actually a lot of different issues, and what are some outgroups that we can target and blame? And so in that target and blame space, what we've seen here is that Māori are often targeted, but also, like, overseas, it's been migrants. But one of the big consistent patterns across the world is targeting transgender people, their rights to access healthcare, their ability to access healthcare, and their rights to access, you know, basic needs like bathrooms. So, yeah, that they've unfortunately been a real political football, and we've seen New Zealand First in particular target trans people.
Yeah, it's really interesting. The sort of sources that they're citing are mostly coming from the UK, and then you've got MPs like Ricardo Menendez-March has said this is the sort of, we're just playing into imported culture wars. It doesn't really seem to align that much with the research that's coming out of Aotearoa regarding puberty blockers, eh?
Well, no, not at all. And this is the other issue, is that there's no funding for research at the moment. Researchers are consistently being told that their work is fundable, but there's no money. So even if the government was this big proponent of research, you need to actually put money into research, people to put to do these studies. They're waiting on a review from or a study from the UK. But the thing that Jamie really consistently points out in her piece is that, you know, puberty blockers, one of their main uses or other uses is what they call like precocious puberty. So kids just getting puberty early and wanting to prevent that. But they've not banned them for that. So they're safe enough. Puberty blockers are deemed safe enough for the kids who are getting early puberty, but not safe enough for transgender kids in this case. So it seems like a real double standard, and one that, yeah, will cost you know, these young people a lot in the future in terms of then having to access gender-affirming care for parts of puberty that could have been prevented. And then, of course, the mental health-related issues, which I think these experts have also pointed out, well, you know, if you guys are so concerned as a government about these young people's mental health, what are you putting in place so that trans young people can access mental health services? And there's not, again, there's no solution in terms of research, and there's no solution in terms of here's an alternative, we're concerned about your mental health.
Yeah, it's also really interesting, Jamie's piece, the title, puberty blockers, why politicians overriding doctors sets a dangerous precedent. I think that's a really interesting topic mm-hmm. and relates to a lot of other issues. Like, I can't help but think of the sort of really harsh abortion laws in the States yep. and how dangerous it can be for governments to be interfering in, you know, policy around health. Is this something we're going to see more of, do you think?
Very concerning. Definitely I'm concerned about reproductive health care as well, access to that. And then, of course, there are all of these different groups for it, like, you know, access to very specific medicines or health care, like, changes their lives a lot.
Mm.
So this is a concern. It's a concern when, you know, we're talking, in the case of these young people, 1 to 200 young people. We're not talking about, like, thousands and thousands and thousands, which is, like, almost like sometimes how opponents are criticising it. We're talking about 1 to 200 young people who go through considerable psychological and medical review before being able to access these puberty blockers.
Mm.
Then you do have to think, like Jamie's title, like Jamie's argument, like, what does that mean for a broader group of New Zealanders?
Mm.
And it's concerning. It's concerning when government does start to interfere in people's lives to this degree. Even when people might be accessing something through, like, a private healthcare system, right? So it's quite concerning, and it's really interesting because it's actually quite the opposite of what you would argue from ACT Party first principles as well. So, you know, ACT was initially, in the 1990s, a libertarian party. And libertarians liked more government. They liked government out of people's bedrooms, government out of people's lives. But this doesn't quite map on to that ideology, which is quite concerning. It does seem like a lot of our parties have more gone into a let's target outgroups, let's bully other people in a way, you know, let's target that group over there, rather than, hey, let's look inwards and see what are some of the big issues we want to fix. That's a bleak state of affairs in politics, but it is one that people can kind of latch onto and say, oh, yeah, that's something that I support, rather than working through, these very big complex issues about healthcare access, which we know is a consistent issue for New Zealanders and their top few issues that they want solved. But instead, you know, we focus on these 1 to 200 young people.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like they've overlooked just the nuances of this issue and, like, just how deep it goes. And it might be a complex issue to tackle, but it seems like they've ignored the basic evidence, which is the thing that surprises and baffles me.
We've seen it's been a really interesting week in terms of New Zealand politics and the Kennedys, right? The classic Kennedy family. Tatiana Schlossberg, sorry, I can't say her name, came out. Schlossberg, again, look it up. She's the granddaughter of JFK and the daughter of Caroline Kennedy, and she's come out saying that, well, she's got terminal Hodgkin's lymphoma or some kind of similar sort of cancer, and come out and said, well, actually, you know, I'm going to die in the next year or so. And she's my age, she's 34, 35. And she's got a little baby, and that's how she's found out she had cancer. And she's saying, well, on the other hand, you know, my cousin is RFK Jr., who's defunding all of these vaccines and all of these, different potential treatments for the cancer that I have. That's what she's arguing. And so that's that broader trend in society, in populism, to kind of defund evidence, to defund science. And I think it's one we should all really be concerned about in our democracy and in the capacity for, you know, technology and research and science to really further human health and make our lives better. It's looking rather impeded at this point in time.
Let's touch briefly on National's announcement. It's proposed pushing up of the contribution rates of KiwiSaver to 12%. What will this mean for New Zealanders?
Well, National are kind of coming out with policy, which it's pretty amazing because we've seen Labor come out with a couple of policies. We've seen National come out with a policy now. I watched the announcement over the weekend and I was sitting there waiting with bated breath. What's it going to be? What's it going to be? What's it going to be? And it was this KiwiSaver tweak, which I think a lot of people are quite supportive of broadly. Various people have come out and said, well, hopefully this doesn't mean that employers are cheeky and do a total package, you know, that they understand that KiwiSaver is a plus on top of the money offered. And, yeah, so we've seen a few criticisms around the outside, but it seems, though, this is kind of a direction that savings policy will go in this country. And I think from what I've seen is a lot of experts say that this is genuinely a good idea and something that we need to be doing to ensure that New Zealanders have that greater investment. Of course, more critical people are saying, well, you know, we do need a decent minimum wage and we do need a living wage and people need to actually have money in order to be able to save it. So there's that bit of critique. This is kind of where we're sitting at this point in time, is that the amount that people put into KiwiSaver and the amount that businesses, you know, their employer put into KiwiSaver will look to increase over time, especially if National wins. So that's a broader trend.
One of the main concerns I heard with this is kind of smaller local businesses needing to contribute a considerable amount of money more per year. How are they tackling that?
There's not really necessarily a plan for this. And so, you know, if you think about the KiwiSaver policy, it sits alongside this agenda of economic growth from National and growth for small businesses and talking about being a pro-small business and pro-business party. So from what I've seen, there's not a specific plan there. I would also say, though, that we're pretty early on in this election cycle. We've seen Nicola Willis actually say in various media that we're about a year out from the election in this last week or so. So we're expecting maybe November. So I think we can expect there to be more plans or discussion. Again, this is one of those policies people have said is a bit light on detail. Labor was criticised with their two economic policies as well for being a bit light on detail and needing more of that background. So this is kind of where we're sitting at this moment, about a year out from the election. Those are the two alternatives that are emerging. But interestingly, I would say that a lot of these policies do sit well together in the centre, you know, firmly in the centre. It's a battle for the centre.
Interesting. It'll be interesting to see how more policy announcements roll out, but good that it's all starting nice and early for us, isn't it?
Well, we get to think about it. This is ideally how it should work in a democracy, that we've got these options put forth and we get to think about it and, like, you know, commentate on it, you know, discuss it with friends, like, think about it a bit more and then choose who we vote for. That's what we get to see. And, I mean, of course, the minor parties are going to come out with their policies as well. We have to remember the Greens normally put out a big, weighty, chunky document. And last time, New Zealand First just had a bunch of numbered points on their website that randomly went up at different times, which were really entertaining, and actually quite a few go, oh, yeah, that one. So, you know, different parties have different approaches. And we'll, you know, we're set to have a bit of a policy this election, so that's cool.
Woohoo, the bare minimum! How good. Thank you very much, Lara. Always
thank
a pleasure.
You, Lara.
And we'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Kia ora, thank
Kia ora.
You.
Ka kite.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.